Jana, we're being joined this week by someone we think always has something on his mind. Come on, we know he always has something on his mind. Sandy Alderson, former general manager and also former president of the New York Mets.
Yes, looking forward to this. One of our favorite guests, not only because he was our guest for our biggest podcast, at least by the numbers so far, I think. Should be terrific. We got a lot to talk to him about.
Yeah, we will ask him all the pertinent questions about the owner of the Mets, Steve Cohen, the now former general manager of the Mets, Billy Epler, and what was going on with that Phantom IL, Buck Showalter, Pete Alonso, and more. We'll play Hit and Error at the end. We'll look at the first quarter of the season for the two New York teams. If you stick with us on the show with Joel Sherman and John Heyman. John, it snap of the fingers, it happens quick, right? We're at the one quarter mark of the season. Every team pretty much has played 40, 41, 42 games in that area, including our two New York teams. And so I wondered if we could kind of just go over it real quickly. Why don't we start with the Mets? They're a game under 500. They're kind of, Adam Ottavino said the other day to me, we are where we should be. I think they've scored one more run than they've allowed. They've had good runs of starting pitching, bad runs of starting pitching, good hitting, bad hitting. They're kind of at 500. The race isn't getting away from them. They're only one out of the last wild card. Braves and the Phillies are kind of in the distance a little bit. Quarter into the season, what do you think of this group?
Yeah, I'm going to look at it as kind of a half full episode, glass. I think they're probably better than a 500 team. I think they got room to go. And if you look at it right now, if you look at those standings, they're only a game out of the playoffs right now as we speak, right? And I don't think we can say that they've played to their full extent, that they've reached their potential, right? I mean, Alonso's got more in him. Obviously, Lindor does. They've had moments, but overall, they've been better in the past. I think Beatty is going to be better. He's shown that he's pretty good defensively. You would hope McNeil's going to be better. I think overall, their offense is going to be better with JD Martinez. And I think we've learned something about the bullpen, which is much better than we would have thought, right? I mean, not only Ottavino been good, Lopez has been good, Reed Garrett's been really good, Diaz maybe not quite as good as he was 2 years ago, but he's been very good. So the bullpen has been excellent. They haven't had Senga. They just got Martinez, and they haven't gotten their two top players playing the way that they can. So I think they got a good shot at the playoffs. I didn't pick them for the playoffs. I think they got a good shot.
Yeah, I didn't pick them either, John, and I'm with you. They have ceiling here. I think you hit on most of it. If JD Martinez gets into a groove, we're talking about a guy who averaged nearly an RBI a game last season when he played. Alonso in particular feels like he has a lot more to give. Is Christian Scott a real guy? And do they get Senga back? And if they get him back, does he look anything like he did for the last 4 months last season when he pitched like a Cy Young contender and like an ace? If they do, I think their ceiling raises considerably to that kind of mid to upper 80s. And to your point, they're sitting at 19 and 20. They're a game out of a wild card. They're not going to catch the Phillies and Braves. I think the Padres might be good enough to be the second wild card and separate a little bit, but that third wild card is going to be a jumble, just like it was last year. And they have some ceiling to go, including some prospects to trade if they want to go in that direction come late July and be seller buyers this season as opposed to sellers. So I think they have room to grow where maybe some of these other teams that are in this, I think the Diamondbacks have room to grow, but I don't think the Giants do by much,
Well, they got
because their lineup
injuries,
is so
right?
weak,
Yeah, they got a lot of injuries right now, so they're kind of in trouble, I think. So I think they're in a decent situation. I'm a little
Second
bit
place team in
surprised
the
here.
NL Central. Can they play as well? Who's ever going to finish second in the NL Central? That feels to me like
Yeah.
where the other wild card might come from, the third one.
Right, and if they get there, they can repeat what the Diamondbacks did. I mean, the Diamondbacks weren't as good as the Braves, the Phillies, and the Dodgers, and neither are the 2024 Mets, but you get in, you never know what could happen. So, and they look like they got a decent shot to get in. So,
Yeah,
I'm not gonna say great, but pretty decent.
I think they're a rung below what it's going to take right now with a chance to grow. Conversely, the Yankees have the second best record in the American League. accomplished without a pitch being thrown this year by the best pitcher in the sport, the guy who won the AL Cy Young Award last year, Gerrit Cole. I think if we would have had Brian Cashman or Aaron Boone in front of us on March 28th and said, you're not going to have a pitch thrown by Cole until probably about mid-June, would you take this? They'd say, where do we sign up? John, what do you think of the group?
Great start. I mean, Soto has been everything you expect him to be. Verdugo's been more than you'd expect him to be. They got a healthy Rizzo, a healthy Stanton. Are they, prime Rizzo, prime Stanton? No, but they're certainly helpful players, right? And now Judge is back and playing. You got that combination of Soto and Judge. That's pretty tough. And the pitching. I mean, look, their ERA is a 3.10, which is only bettered by the Red Sox, shockingly enough. It's really good. Matt Blake does a great job with the pitchers. The bullpen last night, notwithstanding, has been very, very good. And the starting pitching has been really good, particularly the 4 and 5 starters, right? Schmidt and Heel have been really great. I mean,
They've been 1-2, not four,
right.
five.
I mean, you could see the potential, certainly, with Rodon and Cortez, but Heel and Schmidt, right. 1 and 2. They've been their two best pitchers.
Yeah, there's some underlying numbers on the pitching across the board, especially walk numbers. I think Matt Blake talked about that with us on when he was on the podcast, the Yankee pitching coach, that are worrisome that they probably won't pitch as well moving forward, but they are going to get Cole back probably, which should help the overall group. I think they have room to grow, right? It doesn't seem like much, but Tommy Kahnle, who I'm not a huge fan of, he certainly helps lengthen the bullpen. One thing they don't do is strike out enough guys, and they probably need some help against lefty batters, which he gives with his changeup. If LeMahieu comes back, plays third base, suddenly your bench has Birdie and Oswaldo Cabrera on it. It's a much more flexible, better bench. They get Cole back. Does Dominguez help them at some point? I don't believe this is Gleyber Torres' offensive game. And I also think there's more. Austin Wells hits the ball as hard as anyone on the Yankees consistently and has walked more than he's struck out. I think there's offense to come. I think there's a chance for this. The pitching has carried them to this point, mostly. I think there's room for this offense to grow by a grade.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, they've had some guys have had great performances that I'm not sure they're going to keep up. One of our favorites, Jose Trevino, with a two home run effort
Yes.
last night. I mean, he's been incredible. He's supposed to be a great defender. Lowest ERA for pitching ERA over the last several years. So, he's a great defensive player, but I don't think they were expecting this. Cabrera has been better than expected. I don't know. Is Volpe better than expected? I'm not sure. I think we did expect to see an improvement,
Both.
which we have seen. So, I'm not sure. I mean, they've been really good, Joel. Look at their record, right? They've been pretty good. So, and I give them, I'm tipping my cap. I think they're a really good team. Are they better than this? I'm not sure. I think we both picked the Orioles, right? So we're not shocked that the Orioles are the competition. A little surprised that the Red Sox have done as well as they've done, but I mean, the Orioles are a younger team, and really a lengthier lineup, really, if they call everybody up and they use all these guys that are in the minors, certainly do. But it's going to be a fight for the division, though, because there is a big advantage to win the. Even though the wild card has made it to the World Series a lot lately, there is a big advantage, believe me, to winning
Yes.
this division. It's not. That part is not going to be easy, I don't think.
Absolutely should go for winning the division and play some intra-squad games or something to try to stay sharp for those 4 games. John, I'll just highlight something about the starting pitching that really stood out to me because I kind of sensed it. I've been talking about one stat in particular, which is them and the Orioles are the last two teams that haven't had a start of fewer than 4 innings. So, like, none of those blow-up starts where you have to use your whole bullpen and you're messed up for a week. They have that. Do you know they only have two starts all season where a starter has given up more than 4 runs? And in one of them, Luis Gil gave up 5 and 5, and they played to extra innings. The only real blow-up game was that 3-homer game in Camden Yards by Carlos Rodon. Their starting pitchers have done a tremendous job without the Cy Young Award winner of keeping them in the game and not overexposing a bullpen, which I still think because the two lefties aren't great, because Hamilton is down a grade from last year. I think the bullpen has been good and the numbers are better than the reality. And I think one of the reasons the numbers are good is Boone gets to use those relievers how he wants because the starters are getting 5, 6, 7 innings pretty consistently without the guy we think gets 7 innings every time he starts. I think that has been more than anything else, a quarter of the way into the season, the key to the team, which is saying something because they have Juan Soto playing like an MVP.
Right, absolutely. The rotation has been very solid throughout, including Stroman, who's fit in great. I only mention that because there are questions going in about a quirky personality. We haven't seen that. In fact, he and Cole look like they're quite tight. Two smart guys. I don't know, but I wouldn't have predicted that. And he's fit in nicely. Who's really been good is Luke Weaver. Who would have thought? They signed him for $2 million. I'm like, what are they? Why is he getting a major league deal off of what he did last year? Signed for $2 million, they have an option for the following year. That looks like a great move. They do make great moves in the bullpen, and we got to give Boone credit. We've mentioned in the past some strategic mistakes, but a bullpen is kind of the purview of the manager, and he's really doing a good job with that pen. Certainly helps that he has good arms, but I mean, he doesn't have Mariano Rivera there. He doesn't have the 96 team there, and I think he's doing a nice job. I think he's really growing into that job. I really do, and I can see differences. It does take time. I think Mendoza is going to be a very good
So
manager.
do I.
I don't know. Do you still see some strategic questions with Mendoza? Like yesterday, last night, you can't let Ozuna take the lead, right? I mean, you got a
Yeah.
base open. Right, you got a base open. You got Harris struggling lefty on deck. Now, ultimately, Diekman came in and walked him anyway. But Ozuna had already brought in a run. He's got like 40 RBIs. It's like something Hank Aaron has done. He's basically carrying that team with Riley and Olsen and Acuna not playing like that. They can. I didn't think he should have pitched to him there. I thought he should have walked him. But I think Mendoza is going to grow into the job. His personality is fantastic. I think he's going to be great. But it takes a while. It takes a while. I think Boone is there. I actually think Boone is a very good manager at this point.
You know, this is the nicest thing I think I could say about Mendoza. I mean it sincerely, is I think it says a lot about him as a person that when he was a coach and ultimately the bench coach of the Yankees, he subdued, clearly he wants to manage in the major leagues. He subdued it because we see as a manager, his personality and baseball knowledge are far greater than he let on as the bench coach of the Yankees. He was personable and always stopped and gave you time if you wanted to talk, but he low-keyed it, like never kind of
Yeah.
made it look like, oh, let me show you how much smarter I am than Aaron Boone or anyone else. And now, as the manager of the team, you're like, wow, you were impressive to start with, but this is even more so. Or don't you think so? Is like,
Yeah, because he didn't do
whenever I
that.
talk to him now, I'm
Right.
blown away by what he doesn't hold back because he's the lead guy. He doesn't have to hold back.
Yeah, because he didn't do that. I was shocked he got all those interviews, right? Cleveland, I think he was probably second there. San Diego, they liked him there. Now they were going to go inside. So he had three interviews. I'm like, he's the bench coach of an underachieving team, and he's really not out there. We don't see him. He's not getting any publicity. How did this happen? And for whatever reason, it was the right thing because he's really
He's
prepared,
really good,
ready,
yeah.
personality fantastic. I think great in that clubhouse, which is the key to the job, I think, more than anything. And I'm nitpicking. I've seen a couple of strategic things, but it's easy for me to sit in the living room and second guess. I think ultimately he's going to be an outstanding manager, and he's already good.
Well, he succeeded Buck Showalter as manager of the New York Mets. We'll ask our next guest, Sandy Alderson, about Buck Showalter. What happened with the Phantom IL, and a lot more if you stick with us on the show with Joel Sherman and John Heyman. John and I are so happy to be joined by Sandy Alderson, who was an early guest on the show. We always appreciated Sandy joining us. We always appreciated covering Sandy. Sandy, a place to start. You're involved in baseball for over 40 years. You are no longer the president of the New York Mets. I want to note you just did were part of a podcast called The Cancer Straight Talk, produced by Memorial Sloan Kettering. You talked about kind of your playbook for working through your cancer. So I wonder, just as a place to start, how are you doing? And really, after so many years in baseball, what are you doing these days?
Yeah, so thank you for asking. In terms of my health, been cancer-free for 2 years. Originally diagnosed in 2015, just after we clinched the postseason, and before we actually began the postseason. So it's been, you know, over 8 years, but very thankful for the care I've gotten at Memorial Sloan Kettering, as well as just being terribly fortunate. So health is good. Since leaving the Mets, which from a practical standpoint was early in October last year, I've really taken a step back from baseball. I've done a few things with, you know, a couple of groups that have been sort of sniffing around franchises and doing some other pro bono stuff related to baseball. But other than that, staying active with some nonprofits. I'm on the board of a museum in Savannah, which celebrates World War II Air Force, which my father was a participant. So staying busy. And we just got back from a ocean cruise. So we're keeping ourselves occupied.
Sandy, let me echo what Joel said. We're thrilled to have you on again, not only because you had, as far as I know, the most popular podcast that we had in the history of the show, which is something, because we've had Steve Cohen on multiple times and Hal Steinbrenner and many others. Joel likes anybody who's very smart, and I like anybody who's very honest. So you fit both of our criteria, and so we really appreciate you and having you on.
You got a low bar.
Well, I don't know. How do you look back? I mean, I not to say that you're done, and maybe you're going to take a job at some point. You seem you're healthy now. You seem to be doing well. But how do you look back on your career? Anything you're particularly proud of? You won the World Series, certainly with the A's. You've been the World Series again, the most recent with the Mets, 2015, but certainly several other times with Oakland. And any regrets you have in your career?
Well, look, I it's been a great 40 years or so. I got into baseball serendipitously, I would say, and was fortunate enough to hang around for a long time. certainly the my tenure with the A's, it was 17 years or so. We really had some great success there, but I was fortunate to work for a great owner, the Haas family, and that really set the tone for, you know, how I tried to function and operate in various roles over, you know, a couple of different franchises and with Major League Baseball. there's always regrets. You know, I wish we'd won the World Series in 2015. I think that team would have been as storied as the 1986 team had we won, simply because of the way in which we accelerated through the regular season after the trade deadline, with a variety of different new players coming in, making contributions. So certainly that was a highlight. You know, outside of my normal duties, I'd say the gold medal in Sydney in 2000 was a highlight. One wouldn't necessarily assume that, but it was like a pennant race and a World Series all wrapped up in a 2 week period. It was really great. And of course, probably know that Sean Burroughs, who was on that team, recently passed away. But it's a reminder that it's been 24 years since that team was put together. In terms of regrets, you know, there, I try not to go back and analyze things I could have done differently. Plenty of those things, certainly. But, you know, I wish we had won the World Series in 2015. At the same time, coming back with Steve Cohen, you know, in 2020, late 2020, was a real opportunity. I will always appreciate the fact that he gave me that opportunity, and I was able to be around during that transition period. I don't look back very often. And unfortunately, when I look forward, it's a short horizon.
Saying the only half the members of the show were at the Sydney Olympics in 2020. I was in the ballpark when Ben Sheets three hit the Cubans. We had to make a devilish decision that night because Rulon Gardner was beating the great Russian wrestler Karelin at the exact same time. Which are you doing? I stuck with you, Sandy. I stuck with the baseball and Ben Sheets. You mentioned Steve Cohn. There was a sense that you joining him helped was a key in helping him get the team at a time where there were probably other owners who had some strong suspicions about it. I wonder if you think that's accurate. And also, we have some years now. Is Steve Cohn a good owner of a baseball team? Why not?
Well, yeah, I can't tell you whether my involvement was helpful or not to Steve in getting approval for ownership. I was a known commodity at the time, and so it's possible. On the other hand, the way things went and some of the contracts that came down the pike in the subsequent 3 years, I'm not sure that I was the stabilizing force that they anticipated. I think Steve will be a great owner. I think that he is totally committed to the team. I think that he has learned a lot over the first 3 years, both in terms of how to compete as well as how to operate more broadly. And I think that the future is bright for the Mets. And I think that probably the reset, if you will, that 2024 represents is a good thing. In the stock market, it's always good, they say, it's always good to for the market to pull back occasionally and solidify its gains before moving forward further up in the, and so I think in that sense, Steve is learn quite a bit, and I think that ownership is well positioned going forward, given his resources and what he's learned over the first 3 years of his ownership.
You mentioned the big contracts, obviously Scherzer, Verlander. There were others. What do you think he's learned from that? And how well positioned do you think they are? And obviously, he had a great year in 22. 23 was a disappointment. As you said, this year is a reset. They're doing okay. What do you think going forward? Are we going to see those big contracts? Is he going to, I mean, Juan Soto will be out there. There's going to be some big free agents. Is he going to dive back in, or did he learn so much that he's going to do something different now?
I think, first of all, I think when Steve came in, he understood that to be competitive early on, he was going to have to participate in the free agent market until the farm system was in a position to, sustain the major league team over a period of time. And so I think that, in that sense, that what's happened over the last year or so shouldn't be a surprise. It's a transition from something, yes, spectacular, but also somewhat necessary in order to be competitive and satisfy expectations. But over the long haul, that sort of approach is probably not sustainable. And so I think that, I think that there was a learning curve, but Steve's a quick study. And I think what you're seeing now is setting a foundation for going forward. And look, they're competitive now. It's not as if team is thrown in the towel. That's not the case at all. So see where it goes for the remainder of the season. But I think Steve is being prudent, and at the same time, I fully expect that he'll utilize whatever resources he has at the appropriate time, given his experience and what he's learned over the last 3 years.
Sandy, at the beginning of his administration, look, there was some rough going, right? Jared Porter, Zach Scott, but there also was concern, I think, about working for him, right? It was hard to ignore that how many people talked about Black Edge and what was in it and their concern from the financial world. Do you think that his ownership to date has shown who he is as an owner? And now, I mean, they you don't do ultimately hire David Stearns, who's looked at as one of the best and brightest in the business, that people will now be, yes, I trust this. I'll come work in New York for the Mets for Steve Cohen.
Yeah, I think that I think that's the case. I think hiring David Stearns was a big get. As you recall, we made a lot of excuse me, effort to hire someone in 20 prior to the 22 season, and it was difficult to do so. I think that bringing David in has stabilized things. And I think probably established a certain amount of independence within the baseball operations department. but I think that, Steve will always be Steve. The finance business is a little bit different from the baseball business. But I think Steve understands how it's different, but doesn't tolerate, failings where it's similar. So I think that look, I think the Mets future is definitely an arrow straight up.
You know, when I introduced you, I mentioned how honest you are. So I know you were not involved in this, but you were there last year. So I do want to ask you what your perspective is on the fake IL situation. You know, a lot of people are looking at it as like, well, Billy Epler was punished, but a lot of people do this, or everybody does it. I don't know. What's your pers When did you find out about it? What was your perspective on this?
Yeah, look, I don't want to get into a lot of detail, but let me say this. I used the Phantom DL once in my 40-year career back in the late 80s. I can tell you the player who was involved. I felt terribly about it and never did it again. it is not, in my view, a common practice, and to the extent it is a common practice, it shouldn't be. Clearly, there are gray areas with respect to to the injured list, and there are judgment calls that need to be made. But in some cases, and again, not focusing exclusively on what happened with the Mets, that the injured list was being used improperly, has been used improperly around the league from time to time. But what disappointed me more than anything else was the reaction to this in the media, which is to say, nobody was terribly upset about it. Nobody thought it was something that didn't happen all the time. And actually, the only person I saw that reacted that way was Zach Scott, who does his own little podcast. But in any event, it's not something that I think is widespread, and it shouldn't be. So Major League Baseball took action where it thought it needed to.
Sandy, obviously, this practice bothered you, and I hope you forgive a blunt question, but there is question about how Major League Baseball found out about this. There was a letter sent to them that detailed it, and the sense around the Mets was you were no fan of Billy Epler. Among other things, he dismissed your son from the working in the front office. I'll ask the blunt question: was this you?
No, absolutely not. Look, if I had wanted to communicate with the commissioner's office, I would have communicated directly to Dan Halem, the commissioner, people I've known for, 20 or 30 years. From my standpoint, I thought that issue was behind the Mets, behind us, and had no reason whatsoever to write such a letter. But anybody that knows me, knows that's not the avenue I would have pursued. Was I a big fan of Billy's? No. But that's, separate and apart from anything else. So as far as I'm concerned, I don't think Major League Baseball ever determined who wrote the letter. And there were things in that letter that I was unaware of. Short answer is no.
You threw one up at the net for me here. You said you were not a fan of Billy's. Am I wrong? Did you have something to do with the hiring of him? And if so, like, why weren't you a fan? He was on the job there for 2 years. Why not?
Well, look, I was directly involved, and I've said to myself and other people, had we to do it over again, I would have hired Billy again, because I think, given the situation that we were facing, Billy was the right choice. On the other hand, over time, I became less involved in the baseball operation, and putting aside anything with my son, was more and more distant from the baseball operation. And look, people have differences of opinion, different points of view. So, but you asked me a question, so I gave you an answer.
You do that. Let me ask you this. Did you find out this was going on while you were in that position? And did you do anything to stop it?
I don't want to get into the details. So. But the answer is yes and yes.
Okay.
John, would you like to ask another one then?
Yeah, you know what? Let's ask about that GM search. I mean, obviously it was difficult. I mean, whether it was Steve's reputation, New York, people comfortable, I don't know. Maybe this is me, maybe I'm the only one interested, but I'm curious. The names I'd heard, and correct me if I'm wrong, if there were other names, were Antonetti, Forrest. We know Billy Beane was looked at some point. Stearns was pursued heavily, I think, at different points. And I guess Milwaukee just didn't let him interview, which is their prerogative. And ultimately, he looks like an excellent choice. Were those the names? And did you feel you were ever close on any of them? And, ultimately, what do you like about Stearns?
Well, the names you just read off are, the usual, were the typical suspects at that time. A lot of them were under contract, so it was difficult to talk to any of them. We did get permission to talk to one or two, but ultimately that it was very difficult to break through those contractual obligations, and we had to respect those as well. So that was, that was difficult. But as I said, very happy that we were able to hire Billy at the time that we did. As far as David Stearns is concerned, I think, I think he's well respected in the industry, but I think also he's well respected as an individual, and in setting the culture in the baseball operations department for the Mets. I think that has been and will continue to be very important. And I think he, what he has done, look, anytime somebody new comes in, they bring in a few of their own people and there are changes that are made, but I think he's been measured about that and doing his best to figure out, what, to retain from the old regime and what needs to be updated or improved. So, I think he's just, his leadership style is very reassuring. And he's obviously a smart guy and articulate. but I think also, he's empathetic. And I think that the operation there. Now, look, I don't talk to anybody there, so it's not like, I have firsthand information, but my sense from having talked to David before he took the job and observations from a distance thereafter, I think the organization is in a great position.
Sandy, you had to do something like this when you were general manager of the Mets. You had a franchise icon in David Wright, and you had to decide, do we go long-term with him? I think previously you had discussed the idea of not loving that second contract, the one that takes a player into his 30s, and Wright ended up stenosis, not in a great situation. Mets have something similar, homegrown player, beloved by the fans, and Pete Alonso. I'm wondering how involved at all were you along the way here? I mentioned it last week. I think he was offered 7 years at $158 million at some point last season before the trade deadline and didn't do it. What do you think about his situation? And would you, knowing everything you know about the player and these kind of contracts, would you do everything possible to keep him?
Well, that's a good question. First of all,
I try, Sandy, I try.
With respect to David, I thought at the time, I haven't been a big fan of long-term contracts during my career, but, signed a few of them, regrettably, in many instances. But in David's case, I thought it was important for the Mets to sign David because of the statement it would make to Mets fans. It was about the brand, and I thought that the Wilpon family and the Mets, it was important to sign David. because I think it was a way to establish or reestablish credibility with a fan base. I'm not sure the same situation exists with respect to Pete. I don't think Steve has to do anything to, establish his credibility as an owner. I think it will be strictly a baseball decision. And, I like Pete, Pete was a second round draft pick. He's homegrown, as you mentioned. He's just, been a great representative of the Mets. What they will do, my guess is with, David there, there will be less emotion and more hard realism about whether they sign him or not. But clearly, he's somebody the fans enjoy. And if there's anybody, given the entire circumstance, including the fact that he's homegrown, et cetera, if there's anybody that deserves a long-term deal, Pete obviously is that guy. So I think that had an impact, like when Brandon Nimmo signed his contract. I think Steve recognized the value of, a homegrown player. So we'll see.
You were in charge for both of those picks, Nimmo from Wyoming, now the greatest player ever out of Wyoming, and Alonso was picked, I think, around 63rd or 64th, something like that. So great job by you on that. Right now they're performing as the two best offensive performers, regulars on the team. But this team looks a little bit like the 2015 team did at this point, right? That 2015 team was just kind of around 500 for the first, not only quarter of the season, about the first half of the season. How do you know when a team is going to switch from a 500 team and make that kind of run? Does this team have it potentially in it? And I hate those double questions, but since we have you and I'm asking you about the 2015 team, was Wilmer Flores really not traded because somebody failed a physical, or was it because he cried?
It wasn't because
I never had a chance to ask that before. So,
no, Wilmer was not traded because somebody else involved in that trade failed a physical, and I think it was the one time in my tenure with the Mets that a doctor stepped up and said no. at least in connection with a trade. So that's the reason that deal did not go through. But
how does a team turn it around like that? Go 80 games and be average, and then all of a sudden, that team had some good elements, Cespedes, Granderson, but nobody saw it coming for the first 3 months of the season.
Well, we made some acquisitions around the edges. We acquired some relief pitching. We got a couple of Kelly Johnson and a couple of others before we made the Cespedes trade. So, and we made a couple of deals, I think maybe one deal afterwards. But there were probably six or seven new players on the team as of the deadline or thereabouts. As far as predicting that, you know, look, we traded for Javier Baez in 20, whenever it was, 2021. And the team did not catch fire. So you never know. You know, it may work, it may not. But I think in that case, in 2021, as well as in 2015, we needed to make the effort to try. And, you know, as I recall mentioning to Fred and Jeff at the time, you know, this was about credibility as an organization. And that's why we made the effort we did. And we were fortunate. I mean, the team just caught fire and was really unbeatable through most of the postseason until the World Series.
You know, Sandy, if you're around the Mets for a long time, you know, a lot of strange things have happened to this organization that are kind of feel more off the beaten path than most. One of them happened late last season. Buck Showalter essentially announced his own firing at a press conference. I don't know that I'd ever seen that before. And then, look, I heard this story. You could tell me if it's part of Mets craziness or not, that after the last game of the season, or maybe even after that game, there was like a bunch of the young Met employees were essentially having an end of the season dance party, and it was very loud and not that far from the manager's office, and that the president of the New York Mets, Sandy Alderson, felt that that was not great decorum or show of respect for the guy who was accomplished a lot in that manager's office, and went in and let those employees know how he felt. Is that a true story?
Not really.
They liked it though.
Oh, yeah.
There were a few.
Is it close?
I think there were a few people, and you know, a few young people in the clubhouse who, you know, not celebrating the end of the season, but acknowledging the end of the season. So really, it was hardly anything, and I didn't have to get as directly involved as you suggest. So.
Okay, my last question about something totally different, the Oakland A's. You'll be remembered, of course, as the greatest. Well, Billy Beane's pretty good, too. But the guy who made the Oakland A's what they are through analytics and other key moves, obviously had the Bash Brothers, Dave Stewart, Tony La Russa. It was quite an era in Oakland A's baseball. Right now, they're obviously struggling, to put it mildly. You know, it looks like they're going to go to Las Vegas if they're allowed. They may be going to Sacramento in the interim. What do you make of all this? Some people say they just don't have the fans. Others blame the owner. Since you're an honest guy, I thought I'd ask you that.
Well, honestly, if you want to know the real villain in all of this, it's the San Francisco Giants. Because if you go back to 1992, Walter Haas agreed to cede the San Jose territory to the Giants in order for the Giants to build a new stadium in San Jose. They never built that stadium in San Jose, but they kept the territory. And and as a result, I think, ultimately, you know, the A's are moving out of the Bay Area. Were they able to go to San Jose and able to do so, you know, some years ago? I think it would be a very different story. So, you know, I'm not close enough to what's going on there to either be critical or supportive of what the A's are doing. But I do know that if you go way back over 25 years ago, and, you know, to some extent, it lies with me and other people who didn't insist on a mechanism to get that territory back, for example. But ultimately, if the A's could go to San Jose, it would be a win-win for them and the Bay Area. And unfortunately, they're not able to.
Look, as a way to wrap it up, Sandy, I brought up the name Buck Showalter. He was dismissed at the end of last season. He left, so at the same time as you. I wonder what you thought of working for him, and if you still thought he was near the top of his game and could still do this if somebody wanted him to do it.
I'm a big fan of Buck's. You know, when Buck was hired, there were all kinds of, not rumors, but, you know, speculation about Buck and how much control he needed, et cetera. I mean, Buck was a team player the entire time he was with the A's. And if anything, I think that Buck wasn't able to as freely as he would have liked make decisions on players and lineups and things of that sort. So I've got nothing but great things to say about Buck. I think Buck certainly capable of managing in the big leagues again. I'm glad that the Mets hired him, had a great season in 2022. And I think he did an excellent job for us. So I'm a big Buck fan.
I said I was done, but I'd like to follow up on that. You said that you couldn't, as freely as he'd like, make the decisions, including lineup decisions. What, did the lineups come from the front office? Not you, I'm sure, but
I wouldn't say the lineups came from the front office. Again, let me reiterate. I was not involved in baseball operations in 2023, and very little in 2022. Okay, so so on the other hand, you know, I'm not stupid and, you know, decent observer. And I just think that, you know, I think that Buck had a situation, faced a situation where he didn't have as much flexibility and independence as he would have liked.
Well, Sandy, I think John mentioned that your episode was our top-rated episode. I think we're about to beat it. so we had a lot of road here to cover to sum up, you know, your time with the Mets, your long distinguished career, and as always, John and I appreciate you joining the show with Joel Sherman and John Heyman, and we're obviously thrilled that you're feeling well.
Thanks for having me on. I've enjoyed it, and do it again sometime.
All right, Sandy. Thank you very much. We, of course, thank Sandy Alderson for joining us on the show. John, hit or error?
I'm going to take liberty with this and give a hit to you for your documentary, 1990 documentary on the Yankees. I was there in 1990, and I didn't realize how interesting a team this was. And you're right. You have it all set up, all this stuff going on behind the scenes. And I'm really looking. I did an interview for it, but
you're
really
in it, John. I've seen it.
All right. Great. I'm looking forward to seeing it, Peacock. And congratulations. And a hit goes out to you, Joel Sherman, my co-podcast I guess.
Yes, John, I appreciate it. During the pandemic and the worst of it in 2020, when we didn't have any games, we were all kind of desperate trying to figure out what to, you know, we still put out a edition every day, what to put into it. And I've always had the 1990 Yankees on my mind. It was their worst team since 1913, which was literally the first year they were called the Yankees after the Highlanders. And somehow they were actually worse off the field than on it. And I just started to do some interviews with people. And then I went to our sports editor, Chris Shaw, and I said, Chris, I think I have a series here. And it ended up being an 8-part series. It was over 30,000 words, I believe, close to 35,000 words in all, kind of like a book in 3 weeks. And then it got optioned to be a documentary. And it premiered. The first episode was showed at the Paley Center last week. People seemed to really, really like the doc. It's three parts, all three one-hour episodes will drop on Peacock this Thursday, May 16th. And, I wrote it, I had very little to do with it after I write it. DJ Caruso, the director, who's a feature film director, just finished a movie with Anthony Hopkins in Morocco, in fact, did a terrific job taking a lot of information from those 35-ish thousand words and boiling it down into three one-hour episodes. And I do hope people watch it.
Yeah, like I said, I was there. It was my first year, so I was just trying to get by on the beat, probably
Yeah.
against you and Mike Kay. But looking back on it, a lot did happen. I mean, obviously the Steinbrenner suspension that stood out at the time and still stands out. But everything that happened to Mel Hall and many of the other characters on the
A
team,
no-hitter where they
with
lost four
Bonner.
nothing.
Oh, Andy Hawkins, right,
Deion
right.
Sanders debating baseball or football, Cougar Cubs
I
in the
loved
clubhouse
Dion, by the way.
peeing.
I loved
Yes.
the guy. He was bad. I
Pasquale.
love Mel Hall. I can say that now because he's in prison, but didn't like Mel Hall. But boy, Dion was a great guy to cover. Really
Pasquale
fun.
Perez's craziness and some more. Anyway, Peacock, Thursday night, all 3 1-hour episodes will drop. John, I thank you for mentioning it on this. I always thank Jake Brown and Tommy Hogan who help us produce this. Don't forget the YouTube New York Post Sports page if you'd like to see the episode. Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts if you'd like to listen. Give us a 5-star rating. Drop a review if you'd like. And as always, we appreciate you joining us on the show with Joel Sherman and John Heyman.